Boiling Point, The Breakup of the United States and Its Citizens, Part 10. This is a novel by Tom Merritt. The Sun, 6. The sun cooked the nation, searing the smoking land. Millions sweated in airports, trying to get back to the places they'd been before the fighting began. In the hot crucible of this American summer, the country had changed forever. Across the broken continent, in airports, cabs, and airplanes, in capitals and in cabins, the disparate peoples of a broken nation paused to hear one last plea from the country that was dying. An older woman's voice began to speak. "Ladies and gentlemen, we stand at a dark time in our history as a nation. The trials and tests of the first Civil War are multiplied tenfold in this one. Some citizens have called for great wars to be fought, and some rebel states have decided that is the way. I think that it is not, and I think the president is prudent to refrain from escalating the conflict through increased military actions. Domestic conflicts have been reasoned out at the UN bargaining table before, and that is what must happen now if we are to preserve this country whole instead of in smoking ruins. I call on each and every one of you tonight, whether you're in a rebel territory or not, to call or write your elected representative and your head of state and beseech them to end this madness. Only through negotiations will we avoid an utter catastrophe and holocaust. Our problems are not so divisive that we cannot resolve them without gunfire and bloodshed. Democracy and freedom will win the day. I believe that. And if you believe it too, then together we can end this horror and plague in the great United States of America." The world paused, and then Jack DeLeo said, "Former President Jane Michael, her administration was the last to operate with a surplus. This is American Unity Radio." The sun set, and the broken pieces of the land cooled somewhat by the venerable woman's speech. South Florida joined the Caribbean Alliance. The remains of Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota became part of the Colorado Republic and helped to defend Denver from the Texans. The Bluegrass Republic negotiated a ceasefire with the U.S., and Canada put forth a resolution to hold peace talks in Vancouver. Jeff, 9. Asheville, Bluegrass Republic. We pulled up to the Great Smokies Airport. Inside, everything had changed. The place crawled with Bluegrass Army patrols. John had no idea what to expect. "All flights are canceled," I returned from the ticket counter, shaking my head. "But they're trying to get everyone to New York or Chicago, since those are the easiest airports to get into. I put us on a reserve list for Chicago. I don't know how long it'll be." John looked scared again. He seemed in some ways like a beaten dog. "Any problems with me?" "No, none at all, John. Faye just needs to be vaccinated before we board." "Ha ha," she smacked me gently. I stopped her with mock concern. "You think I'm juvenile, don't you?" "I think you're crazy," she put on her chicken voice and began poking me. When the rumble finished, we turned to John to apologize, but he wasn't there. We found him over by the bar, talking animatedly to a short man in a suit with slightly wavy brown hair, clutching a beer and sitting on a bar stool, grinning. He waved us over. I took up the invitation. I guess they know each other. Faye followed. Brilliant deduction. "Hope you didn't drive here," John laughed as we got within earshot. "Hey, guys," John turned to us. "This is my friend Gary, who's been chasing all over the high-powered publishing industry and into the Deep South looking for me. Gary, this is Jeff Conroy and Faye..." He paused, searching for a last name. "Tull," said Faye. T-U-L-L. John stared at her. "No, I'm serious. My parents were dorks. I can't help it." "Faye Tull," John enunciated distinctly. "Jeff is a photographer, and Faye was helping him out on a shoot in the Lakota Nation." "Pleasure to meet you," Gehrig shook our hands firmly. "So where are you guys headed now?" John answered for us, obviously still overjoyed at seeing his friend. "Well, they're headed to Chicago, so I'm going to tag along with them and try to fly into St. Louis from there. Want to come?" "Sure, why not?" Gehrig looked as if we might explain to him why not. "Too bad Steve and Helen aren't here. We could have had a little university reunion." Faye sensed the concern and tried to allay it. "We're heading back to Denver, if there's anything left of it. We haven't been able to get through on the phone for days." "Well, if you don't mind me tagging along, I'll accompany you to Chicago," Garrig looked somewhat hopeful that he had interpreted Faye correctly. She didn't let him down. Not at all. That'd be great. Cool. I'll put us on the next plane. His enthusiasm impressed me, but I hardly believed him. Yeah, right, Garrig. We'll be sitting by the president, too, huh? John slapped Garrig a little roughly on the back. No, man, I'm serious. Miss Condry gave her word of gold with the airport manager. As soon as the Bluegrass Army got here, I was told to get on whatever plane I wanted, with whomever I wanted. John still looked skeptical. How did you manage that? Garrig got in John's face. I told some sob story to a powerful publishing magnate about some schmo getting lost in Arkansas, and she took pity on me. By the way, I get 10% off the top of your memoirs. He grinned. Like hell! John backed away and raised his voice. Like you can even write, McGillicuddy? Garrig backed off too. Old college pals, huh? I grinned. Yeah, John became suddenly somber. You heard about Colby, huh? He had told us the night before about his friend and commanding officer Kolbrowski dying in a drug deal in New Orleans. Yeah, Garrig hung his head and seemed to look ashamed. That was hard. To go through all that and get snubbed out so randomly, but it's wartime. Garrig ironically cheered up. There'll be time for crying when the shooting stops. You've been watching too many movies, John smirked. Who's getting you on that plane, Johnny boy? Garrig mussed John's hair. It was an incongruous sight. I decided to stop feeling like an intruder and express some appreciation. Thanks, Garrig. We really appreciate this. Sure. Let's just hope we don't get hijacked. He took a final swig of his beer. I'll be right back. With that, he got up and walked through a door marked No Admittance. My little Garrig is moving up in the world. What do you expect from a criminology student? I just hope the plane doesn't crash into a wall. John looked at his beer, raised it. To Mac. A tear rolled out of one eye. He took another big swig. Kolbrowski, 8, Mount Judea, Ozarkia. This is my body. Take it and eat it. Do this in memory of me. I sermonized from the pulpit. A good 6 of the 20 inhabitants of New Judea had turned out to hear my sermon. Some of them looked a bit worried. I would rest their fears. I've never seen Holy Communion done with microwave sausage before. The woman who'd fed me my first night there piped up quite inappropriately. Quiet, madam. This is a solemn and holy service. The mysteries cannot be known to all but the initiates, else they would be but common aphorisms as gravel to swine. Now, take this and chew it. This is my stubble. Do this in memory of me. Another woman impertinently interrupted. I know our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ didn't say anything about stubble, nor with no broccoli neither. I'm saying it now, my dear lady. I shook my glowing mane, which now covered almost every inch of earthly flesh about my face. She cowered back in the presence of my divine hairiness. The First Church of Resistance is not reformed, but transformed. We must all seek the true enlightenment of the truth that makes us holy. You see but bits of common everyday food here and scoff, but I ask you, what was more common in Jesus' day than bread and wine? What more common? Speak! The lady acknowledged her ignorance with tacit silence. Ah, the bliss of the unknowing. And so, to drive out the Texans, to excommunicate, exorciate, and exorcise them from this land, we take the common goods of our table, representing that first meal given to me by yonder good lady on the first day when God sent me unto this town to begin his revolution. The service went on after that without a hitch. No one spake a word, but contemplated the mysteries of the sausage with simple divinity. I was well pleased with my new converts. I could see it writ on their faces they would be telling friends soon about this new church. After the service, I retired to the rectory and had my manservant Abe fetch me some grapes, cool water, and a fan. Grapes is no problem, Gus, Abe paused on the threshold of the veranda. That's Augustine arisen, you precious soul. I waved him on. But like I say, Augustine grisen, the grapes is no problem and the water ain't warm, but why do you want a fan out here in the garden? You can't even plug it in. Not that kind of fan, dear man, a fan like this. I made the sign of the dove with my hands. Made from paper, not from man-made steel. Puzzled thought labored across Abe's face. But isn't paper man-made? I smiled tolerantly. Go, Abe, and fetch them quick. He left, and just in time. The company I did not want to fool around for arrived. Four men of able body had approached me one night, and I revealed the plan for the secondary revolution. While the church blinded the Texans with the truth, the revolutionary crusaders of resistance would cut the legs out from under them. All we could find besides our shotguns was this old pickaxe. All the other stuff's too big and heavy. It's all damn pewter mechanized, like my pap used to always say. That was the noble leader Jeffrey presenting his armory. Hail, Jeff, his consultant added from the background. Why don't we just get us some beer in town and grab a few more rifles while we're at it? Tain't no trouble and worth the trip, I says. Well said and well met, gentlemen. I approved of their plan, bolstering their spirits. Here is the coin which you do require on your journey. I hope it does provide you something extra for your entertainment. Hey, this is $5, one of the more scurvy squires complained. This won't buy bubblegum, paps. Why don't you keep it and buy a shave? We all laughed at his mirth, and I assured him, like Samson, I remained strong without the blade. He seated the truth of my words. You does smell strong. I soothed him with humble words of mirth. What ho, gentle knight, you wound me. Now to the task at hand, and be quick, for the revolution cannot wait. Come on, let's just take the $5 and beat it. We can at least get a beer with it. What? Are we going to split it four ways? The men trailed off in their happy joyousness, boosting each other's spirits, to my enjoyment, to help them along their happy sun-filled day. I lay back among the knotted pines of old Mount Judea, resting place of the divine and holy. The sun looked down on me kindly, warming me throughout like a maiden drawing water from a well. I felt the spirit rushing within me, ready to bring forth new wonders on the earth. The revolution had begun. I thought of the happy worshippers that morning in devout obeyance, and how they would but multiply, spreading across the land like lots of tacks on a bulletin board. I envisioned the new revolutionary army marching to arms, raising up the poor and weak behind them as they went, until they swelled their ranks to the thousands strong. I realized also Abe had not returned with the fan, and I was getting sore burned by the sun. I went inside to rest. How heavy lies the head that wears the crown. Candel, 6, Tucson, Arizona. The Californians had finally ordered me back to Los Angeles. I'd received my new assignment on the flight back tomorrow. Stephanie had moved back to L.A. after they secured Nevada. Some friends hinted she'd taken up with someone new. Big surprise there, but I didn't care anymore. I had plenty to worry about. I'd become a star in the California Republic. If anything, Stephanie needed me. Yeah. I kicked a rock and watching the pink sunset below as I walked along a mountain ridge outside Tucson. Yeah, VIP in California, you damn killer. I had tried to do the right thing. It ended up responsible for deaths of several thousand people, including Steve's friend Sam. The higher purpose of the California Peace Party espoused fell apart in the face of that. They could have left Arizona out of it. Then Texans would have rolled through the entire Southwest. Who's to say it would have been worse? Still, people died at my feet following my orders, and I hadn't gotten too comfortable living with that yet. It was one thing to kill a man directly. It's another thing to order someone or even a bunch of someone's killed. It's even worse to send someone to their death. Who would I become? I looked at my red, sun-scarred hands. The trail I was on wound around the mountain like a bright red ribbon. The sunset dimly lit the way ahead. I thought I saw someone sitting on the side of the trail. When I got there, it turned out to be an old stump. Still hadn't gotten used to the heat out here. I'm a seaside man, you know. This hot desert, no humidity stuff, plays havoc with my sensitive skin. I mean, I'm a sensitive guy. Why else would I be blubbering on in my head nonstop about the wonderful job I'd done killing people? I really regretted Stephanie being like that. Oops, jump track. Happens. But she hadn't even dumped me. She just sent me to my death and strolled back to L.A. to pick up with someone else. Was she such a coward? She had sent me to a war zone to avoid confronting me? I saw someone again in the dimming glow ahead. This time I was sure, so I approached slowly and found a pile of leaves, sticks, and shrubs wound around a clump of scrub brush. I took a big drag out of my water bottle. I hadn't been gone long enough to have heat sickness. I still hadn't decided if I wanted to stay in California. I joined the CPP to change the U.S., not to succeed. Maybe I should move back to Illinois and hide out in a small town. Get a teaching position at the high school, like so many of my burned-out friends. Would they let me go now, anyway? Sure they would. They just wouldn't like it. This time, when I saw someone ahead on the trail, I ignored it. There are ways to beat back insanity, I've always figured. Just keep your head down and concentrate. People have told me I'm crazy for thinking that. Ironic, huh? The sun had almost set, and it was impossible to distinguish the forms ahead. I turned around to head back to my car.
Mark Kandel,
whispered a hoarse, unrecognizable voice. Okay, time to breathe the fairy dust and face the leprechauns. If I'm going to lose it, I'm at least going to look it in the eye as it leaves. I turned and saw that what I thought had been a rock move and walk over to me. No drugs had been taken, I promise you. Who is it? I roughly shouted to cover my disquiet. That kind of thing just gives you away, though.
A friend,
the voice croaked.
You worry? I've come to help you not worry.
The form had gotten near enough for me to see an old man wrapped in many colored blankets, with depictions of hunts and battles and histories woven into them. The setting sun gave too little light for me to see the man's face.
You honor the dead. Death has surrounded you too long. Do not flee death. Let it flee you.
If you try to run away, you will run into its arms.
Death is a part of life, Mark. It's no one's fault. No one should take life from another. But there is no stopping it in the end.
Forget about your heartache and return to the life you have helped make possible. Things are good in your land. Enjoy them. Spread them. Make them better. It is heat that brings change in life.
That's great. Who the hell are you?
The man began to walk past me into the woods. Right before he disappeared in the darkness, he turned his face toward the last of the setting sun, and dead Lenny Bruce as my witness, I swear, I saw the dead Apache chief. A hawk chose that time to race up into the night sky and soar straight to heaven. Steve, 14, Las Cruces, New Texas.
But you're not the same, Steve. I don't even know who you are.
Those tired words. Simone had built up a wall I couldn't surmount. It was a new thing in our relationship. I'd tried to explain the inner workings of Texas to her benefit, how she could benefit from Sam's heroic death. She just didn't listen.
How could I change overnight, Simone? You think Helen and that bastard have screwed me up that much? Give me a break. I was just denying the real good of the state because I was selfish.
Look, Simone, I'm sorry. This is no time to argue. You need support. There's a war widows meeting every Saturday.
Steve,
you know me, don't you? I wouldn't go sit around with a bunch of old women spilling their guts. Publish it in a national magazine through a poem, yes, but
then submit something to New Texas Magazine if it would make you feel better.
She grimaced. I'd rather die than have my poem in that piece of trash.
Watch what you say, Simone. You don't mean that. Come on. I'm there for you. Don't say that anymore, Steve. You aren't you anymore. You're some Texas mad drone. You let them take your mind because you couldn't deal with it anymore. Now go. And take your stupid offers and leave me alone until you get some sense again.
I left. She was angry. It was best to let it lie. She needed time to think and not mope.
I had it. The propaganda office could suggest folks for mandatory rehab. It was often used for subversives and demagogues, but it really might help Simone. It was a real rehab program, after all. They helped people find the good in Texas and work for common goals. I couldn't make Simone see that, but I wasn't a professional. They could do it. They could change her mind.
Hey, Drew, you haven't sent the rehab list in yet, have you?
No, it's right here. I was fixing to take it over to the city hall.
Well, I've got one more name for you to add.
Okay, Steve. You sure do keep them busy over there. Eyes like a hawk.
Hank, 5, Langley, Virginia, USA.
For the last time, the man in the dark suit walked back around in front of Hank and placed both hands on the table. Here's the bargain. You take it, you get a plea bargain, and go free after the deal is done.
I know, I heard it already. I was extremely weary after countless hours without sleep.
Let me refresh you just in case you miss some points. I want to make very sure you understand here, okay? We get you a facelift, new identity, and papers. You return to Texas as a German businessman, ostensibly in the superconductor industry. Now, that's big there, and there's a lot of German manufacturers, so you'll have to, you know, some sway without sticking out. Now, when you start making the deals, you drop hints about funneling some extra euros their way,
Certainly they could use them, even with their war winding down. This is very important information for the U.S., Hank. We get this nailed. The U.N. declares the government corrupt. We get the steward rights to their economy, and they're back in the fold. That's a pipe dream. Texas hasn't cooperated with the U.N. from the beginning. Right, but they'll have to if they get caught in this, because Germany will dump them like a wet rag, okay? Now, once they've chosen us as steward as the lesser of two evils between us and the UN, because God forbid they let Mexico steward, we're back on top. Texas is the plug that stops the leak, see? Ozarkia comes back, the MSA, the Great Plains, the whole shebang, and we concentrate on California and Chicago. Now, if you're all against Texas, like you say, you should want to do this as a patriotic American. Shouldn't matter that it's your only chance. Either this or hard time may be worse. Treason's not real popular these days, Hank. But common. Well, Hank, just sign here and save your life while doing your duty, okay? He put a pen and paper on the table in front of me for the 50th time. Listen, sir, with all respect, I decline. I had it memorized by now. It had to annoy them a little that I repeated the same thing every time. I will not bargain. I have done nothing wrong. Either you let me go to Colorado or you wrongly punish me. Your choice. The old guy steamed between the ears to hear that again. He could almost say it with me, I'll bet. The routine broke before his usual admonition and put-downs when a snot-nosed secretary came in with an armful of papers. Is this Hank Connolly? Yeah, what do you want with him? The dark suit man moved between the secretary and me. If you'll sign here, the director has released him on recognizance to become an academic advisor in London for the Colorado Academic Exchange Mission there. Oh, give me a break. Let me see that. He grabbed the paper out of the secretary's hand. In less than 5 minutes, I was on the phone with Jack Croslin, who had worked a loophole that released me from treason by taking an academic post in London. Didn't hurt that Director Maori is an old student of mine. I helped her along in transferring to Harvard. She's bright and could live with transferring you out of the country. Well, off the continent, as they say now. Tight loophole, but I got you through it. Thanks, Jack. I owe you big again. You paid me back when you saved that guy, John. That was brave, Hank. Believe me, it was. I think you're doing okay. How are Faye and Jeff? Fine, I have to call them soon. Big news. We talked a little more about old times and I hung up. I had 14 hours to get my things together and head to National Airport and fly to London. I felt the same old surge of adrenaline I'd gotten in my political days, but it felt a lot better. That old heavyweight weight, the specter of Rich Morgan, seemed off my back for a while anyway. I practically jigged out the front door of Langley to catch my taxi. New City of Chicago, 2. A man named Frank, staring at the wall opposite the terminal. His life in war-torn Chicago had become drab and uninteresting. The opposite of what he had thought when he stayed behind so his roommates, Gary and Bone, could get away clean. After the initial excitement of the city's takeover, everything settled into the same old bureaucratic routine. He'd heard from Bone a few times since then. She lived safely in Milwaukee. As safe as Milwaukee ever was. Frank was trapped in Chicago. His employment with the AAF government kept him safe, but it also kept him there. He was free to stay in the city and move about it as he pleased, but not free to go. He was too essential as a customs agent. Someone tapped him on the shoulder. Hi, we're trying to make a connecting flight to Denver? A young lady and a young man with a camera stood at the gate. Denver? What are you flying to Denver out of Chicago for? Frank was suspicious. The woman looked like she might fall asleep on her feet. The guy did the talking. We're coming from Asheville. Ah! Got hijacked and rerouted. That made more sense. Yes, you know? People going anywhere to the west generally have to come through Chicago at some point because they've been hijacked. It's how we make a lot of our money. Buy a hot dog or two while you're here. Maybe they'll raise my salary. Don't you need to see ID? Why? You hiding something? Or is it an especially good fake you think I'll appreciate? I know, I bet it's pre-war. You're from where? The woman woke for a second. Colorado. Cool, let me see it. The guy produced his Colorado's driver's license. His name was Jeff. Wow, you have been away a while. They destroyed all these when the Texans invaded. All the new ones are really drab with this mountain thing and say Colorado Republic. We don't get to see too many real driver's licenses from out west anymore. Damn. So can we go? He pleaded. Yeah, just don't take any drugs, guns, or political propaganda harmful to the state, and buy some hot dogs. They moved on as an old college friend, Helen, and some guy who wasn't Frank's friend, Steve, walked up. The not Steve guy wore a harried expression. He was telling Helen that someone would be fine.
I just think Simone doesn't need this at a time like this, and who knows what'll happen to him in El Paso. He can get himself into trouble really easily there. I suppose you can't fly down and get them with things the way they are, Helen trailed off.
Well, she can't very well leave her job now, and besides, the UN is all over New Mexico, even if it is Texas. Steve will be fine. The guy turned pleadingly to Frank.
Hi, kids! Having a domestic entanglement? Sorry, not allowed in the new city of Chicago. Do you have any fruit to declare?
The guy didn't miss a beat. He felt in his pockets. I have some fruit-flavored gum.
No joking, sir. See the sign? You must be very serious. Are you serious? Do you have gum? If so, I'll confiscate a piece.
He handed Frank a piece of gum as Helen finally looked up.
Frank?
She had her open mouth, stunned look on.
Hi, Helen. Frank smiled, enjoying not acting surprised.
What are you doing here? Didn't you get out? Her mouth still hung open evenly as she talked.
No, Gary and Bone went up to Milwaukee, and, you know, there's some fun stuff to do there, but I thought I'd hang around here and catch on painting walls or being a customs man or something, so here I am.
Wow. Well, what do you want us to do? Helen finally closed her mouth.
Prepare to be shot.
What? Her mouth shot open again.
Well, if you look like you're about to be shot in Chicago, it usually deters you from being shot because they figure somebody already has you pegged, so they move on to pick up fresh bait.
I thought joking in an airport security terminal was against the law. The guy pointed to the sign.
Here in progressive Chicago, I can get away with it, unless somebody superior to me decides it's bad, in which case I'll be severely punished, but only for my own good. Now, if you were to joke, I could arrest you, seize all your possessions, declare you dead, and make you my houseboy, unless the security commander wanted you.
Don't they monitor you at these stations? The not Steve guy waved towards an assumed hidden camera.
Oh, yeah, but my commander is used to it by now. He trusts my instincts, for some odd reason.
Helen impatiently started to push on the guy.
Okay, Frank, well, we're moving to Champaign for a while. We should get together.
Don't talk treason, man. I can't abandon my post with the new city. Frank's voice lost all mirth. He looked dead into Helen's eyes.
Well, can I get your address and phone?
Yeah, sure.
They exchanged addresses on the backs of ticket stubs and custom slips.
By the way, didn't you used to tag along with Steve?
Frank looked at Helen.
Yeah, he stayed behind with Simone in New Mexico.
Oh.
There was an uncomfortable pause.
Well, ride us! Frank let them through the customs gate. Drive safely. We'll miss you.
He got the feeling he wouldn't see them again. Helen seemed happier than she ever had with Steve. From what Frank knew of Helen, when she was happy, she disappeared and left the world behind. He turned the radio back up and assumed staring at the walls.
This is an American Unity Radio News update in New York. I'm Greg Whitney. The presidents of the United States, the United Midwestern States, and Ozarkia today submitted a request to the United Nations to negotiate an immediate settlement among the warring factions of the former U.S. This is an abrupt change for the U.S., which until now insisted that all negotiations lead to reconstruction of the old U.S. However, pressure from the powerful Midwestern states seems to have forced the U.S. to the bargaining table. Almost all the other republics and nations have announced agreements to this plan. Leaders will sit down with UN arbitrators in Vancouver to discuss a lasting peace. This has been an American Unity radio update.
And that ends part 10 of Boiling Point.